but it depends on the Christians of a particular generation, both individually and corporately, whether this source of spiritual energy is brought into contact with the life of humanity and the needs of contemporary society. We can hoard our treasure. We can bury our talent in the ground, like the man in the parable who thought that his master was an austere man and who feared to take risks. Or, on the other hand, we can choose the difficult and hazardous way of creative spiritual activity, which is the way of the saints. If the age of the martyrs has not yet come, the age of a limited, self-protective bourgeois religion is over. For the kingdom of heaven suffers violence, and the violent take it by force. There's a lot to unpack. There's a lot that you can talk about there. I just like the part about that spiritually active way. That's the way of the saints. And the example.
Yeah, he talks, Mike, about living. He talks about beauty too. He mentions he touches upon it. And I don't know if you've ever read or watched anything produced by Roger Scruton.
I have.
But Scruton has a beautiful video on YouTube called, I believe it's called Why Beauty Matters. It's a bootleg video because the BBC actually took it offline because it was too popular and they hate him. But it was their production. But there's a bootleg copy with Portuguese subtitles. And it's quite worth watching. But he talks about beauty. And he was a philosopher, and he was mostly sort of into aesthetics. I'm not saying everything that Roger Scruton wrote was right. I mean, he was an Anglican. I think he was religiously confused. But he was also, I think, he flirted with Catholicism. A lot of Catholics admired his work. Because frankly, what he said when he talked about beauty was, as far as I am aware, totally Catholic. I never heard anything come out of his mouth that I didn't think was.
You're talking about a man that made entertaining and good work out of explaining to people like you and I and our listeners that one of the most beautiful things that survived our architectural traditions and the few that we have today is the gable roof. The man did 20 minutes on the gable roof. it entertaining and beautiful. So,
And he was a real wordsmith. I mean, a very eloquent man, extremely eloquent. Some of what Dawson said reminded me a little bit of Roger Scruton. The kind of society Roger Scruton would want to see is not a bourgeoisie society. It's not just where everything is all about function and everything is all about efficiency and everything is all about we have these exchanges where we can make money. The kind of society that Roger Scruton talked about was not only building a society where people can live, but building a society where life is actually worth living because things are beautiful, because you can contemplate beauty, because you can you do value truth, because what's ultimately of value in life is transcendent, and money is not transcendent. Money is as imminent can be. It's so imminent that it's simply a means of exchange for other things that actually have more value. That's what money is. And I'm not saying money. I mean, obviously, we use money. People donate money to us. I'm not saying don't give us money. We're not that worldly. Obviously, we have bills to pay. I'm not being Albigensian here and saying that all material things are somehow intrinsically evil. That's not the point. The point is, what are the priorities? When you have a society that has the religious priorities that Dawson said, that values the true, the good, and the beautiful, as Dawson Scruton would emphasize, the beauty part, that kind of society, it lives for the contemplative. It lives for the ecstatic. It lives for what Dawson called, and sort of in a weird way, the erotic, not exclusively the sexual. Okay, it lives for this romance of life, and not this efficient way of hoarding money. That's what the denizens of hell want. I mean, Dante has this great part in the Inferno, the circle where the hoarders and the wasters are. And if for all eternity, they're throwing stones at each other, the hoarders on one side and the wasters on the other. And they're screaming, why do you hoard and why do you waste at each other? It's not about hoarding and it's not about wasting. It's about living a life of virtue, living a life with you can contemplate truth, living a life where you can enjoy beauty and pass it on. And then religiously, it's serving, it's knowing, loving, and serving your God. I mean, these are the things that are of the most weight. And if we live life with that emphasis, then yes, truly, all these other things will be provided. God will provide it. So all these things connect. When you read the book that David Wemhoff wrote, the attorney David Wemhoff, about John Courtney Murray, Time Life Magazine and the American Experiment.
Oh, goodness.
That was very much about, that book is very much about the United States inflicting this capitalist bourgeoisie usurious mode of life on the world, including on Latin countries, on Italy, on Spain. We used think tanks that we created in these different countries to induce them into this wonderful way of life.
That is what the book is about, brother. Remember, I interviewed him for Crusade Live. That's exactly what the book is about.
Wim Hof, yeah.
And
Wim Hof shows it at great pains. And of course, in order to do this, what did they have to do? They had to create a fifth column in the church and use that. And this is the CIA that did this. And this is not some mere theory. It's a conspiracy fact. I mean, because all this stuff is discoverable. Wim Hof did the research. He did the discovery.
He did. Brother, on this, we'll close this subject out because there's a lot of fertile ground that we can return to. By the by, maybe a Reconquest show about some of Dawson's work. Is Gary Potter still able to talk? Is he?
I know Gary Potter, as far as I know, is not able to email. I can't get an answer from the gentleman. But he's not one to do interviews, Mike. He's just not. He's loath to do interviews.
Well, maybe you could talk to Charles about this because you know what Charles would be saying right about now.
Well, not on the air, but as a joke.
No, he would say it as a joke.
By the way, let me mention, since I mentioned Father Fahey, let me just get this out there in case there are any spies in the chat room that are going to tell people, oh, he's quoting Fahey. Father Fahey was brandished with the brush of anti-Semitism. He was accused of anti-Semitism. He wrote a piece called On Anti-Semitism to tell people what he really thought of that subject. And if you ever hear anybody say that Father Fahey was an anti-Semite, read this piece, give it to the person who told you, because it's a calumny. As I saw in another context, it's not a real accusation. It's a word to conjure with. You know, it's just a label to stick on somebody so that you can dismiss everything that they say. So my suggestion is that I just dropped a link in the chat room. He was no anti-Semite, but he's sometimes called that. By the way, I was joking about the spy thing. Don't get all excited in the chat room, please. But read that piece and circulate it among anybody who calls you an anti-Semite for reading Father Fahey or who calls Father Fahey an anti-Semite. That said, Mike, I think that this whole question of the worldview that Dawson is speaking about is something that we need to focus on. All right, because this is of existential import to us right now.
Outside the practice of the faith, and I think this actually incorporates the practice of the faith, this is what men were talking about. This is the conversations that saints, while they were on earth, we didn't call them saints, but they would have been involved in. But I want to go to God and Mammon, Faith and Culture. This is R. Jared Stout, just one paragraph from Stout, what he wrote about what Dawson had wrote here, and I think it put a nice little exclamation point on it, and then we can hear about your thrilling conversation with Wolfgang Smith, which I am excited to hear. It would, of course, be possible to interpret Dawson simply as rejecting the material progress of civilization, as his critics have done. Even Gerald Rosello, who's a friend of mine, by the way. If you ever need to get in touch with Rosello, brother, just send me a note. I'll put you in touch. Even Gerald Rosello seems to admit the grounds for this. Although Jeffrey Tucker, somewhat ironically, accuses Dawson of focusing simply on the beautiful artifacts of Christian culture, Dawson notes that the products of bourgeois culture are, quote, not merely offensive to the aesthetic sense, they are symptoms of social disease and spiritual failure, close quote. Once again, we see Dawson's true aim here. His defense of traditional society centered on agriculture and family is not simply a nostalgic desire, but a recognition that the bourgeois culture we have produced has threatened these fundamental human realities, creating a, quote, divorce of man from nature and from the life of the earth, close quote. Dawson rightly recognizes that the modern spiritual crisis largely revolves around the place of money or mammon. In response, he seeks to uphold the dignity of work. You use that word, brother, dignity, which is something, we need to bring that word back into our dialogue, which is something more than simply earning a wage or the accumulation of wealth. Dawson fundamentally stands against the primacy of money and wealth in human society. Quote, in short, the bourgeois is essentially a moneymaker, at once its servant and its master, and the development of his social ascendancy shows the degree to which civilization and human life are dominated by the money power, close quote. That is not the same thing as rejecting their importance, but only their dominance. Christopher Dawson seeks to relativize money with the assistance of St. Thomas, showing that money is simply a means and not an end. Now, this, let me just say this, brother, and then we'll conclude. As I have said many times here on this program, pointing things out on a daily basis during this show, what mistake is this guy or gal making? He's trying to jam it in a circular hole. The circular hole is the qualitative. The block is the quantitative. He wants to reduce everything down to a quantity. Anyone, and this is just, brother, you can't swing a dead cat without hitting this. Almost everything in modern life can be reduced down to a quantity of something. That's by design. That's the plan. That's how you eliminate the quality, the qualitative, the beauty. We have a friend who's an artist, and God bless our dear friend Norman Fauché, who, brother, maybe I'll send you a picture of the beautiful painting that he kind of donated to me, or I kind of stole, of St. Rock looking wistfully off into some Italian distance with clearly a plague wound on his leg and a dog licking at it, and he's got his stick and his conch shells on his cape. It's a beautiful piece of artwork. You know, Norman was recently contacted by some of our listeners about him custom building, what is it, Maggie Home altars or kneelers? Kneelers for their house, because the gentleman of the house is not a woods craftsman, and he doesn't want to go to get one that's made somewhere in China and assemble it with a screw gun. And Norman, this particular artist, makes these things. And I just happen to know this guy. I don't want to pick on him, but Norman's a painter. He's a sculptor. He painted that. Did you ever see the beautiful icon of Our Lady of Perpetual Health that he donated to us?
Yes, yes.
He painted that. When I say he painted, yeah, he painted it. With his hands, he painted it. And he did the stipple into the Our Lady's crown, the little indentations. That's beautiful, and that also has a quality to it. But he can only produce one of those. It took him 2 weeks to produce one. So I see it, and I go, okay, that's beautiful. How much do you want? And he tells me, I go, okay, really? No, how much do you want? And then we haggle over a price. But that is, to me, that's a perfect example of something that has now beautified my home. Anyone that comes in looks at that and goes, wow, they're staring at it. No, that's beautiful. Where'd you get that? An artist painted it. Because they expect you to say such and such sign shop or whatever, an artist actually painted it.
And that's where art, I mean, that's where art's meant to be enjoyed. Art's not, art, no, until very modern times, nobody painted art for it to be hung up in a museum. Mm. You know, going into a museum can be an interesting experience. It can be a learning experience, but it can also be, I get what I call artistic indigestion. Going, you know, you go from one, you know, going through the Vatican museums is an interesting thing. And I have my certain favorite things I like to see when I'm there. But after a while, I just, okay, I've seen enough beauty. I'm glutted, you know, on beauty right now. But how were those artworks originally meant to be enjoyed or contemplated, viewed in churches or in people's parlors or in even, you know, perhaps civic buildings, mm-hmm. right? Places that you'd want to beautify, places where people are. Not necessarily places where people go strictly to see art, but places where people are and they're to be decorated. Now, obviously, sacred art has a sacred purpose, so there's lots of it in a church, or should be. But we can, of course, decorate our houses with sacred art. Decorate, by the way, literally meaning to beautify our mm-hmm. houses with sacred art. But even non-sacred art has its purpose, and it's not meant to just be collected in a museum where you can go through it and just see a thousand of them in a day. I mean, that's not the way these things are meant to be relished, and that's why putting it in somebody's home, like when your guests walk in and look at it. So when you look at it, if it's sacred art, maybe that's where you say your rosary at night. Where you and Miss Candace pray your rosary together, looking at that image. This is the contemplative thing with art. It's not just something to be mass produced and sort of mass enjoyed quickly, like we eat McDonald's, right? That's not the way. Although I don't eat McDonald's.
Picture
and I guess
in the
you
chat
don't
room.
Either.
Picture in the chat room. By the way, picture in the chat room if you're of the Our Lady of Perpetual Help, hand painted by the artist Norman Fauché. Yeah, brother. I love the art. I love the artwork, and it is meant to be to beautify, and it helps to sanctify your home too. You know, when we had the Latin Mass Community Rosary in our house about 8 weeks ago, and had 50 some odd people in a room built for four. One of the things that David Simpson commented afterwards, he goes, you can always tell when you're in people that are trying to be good Catholics' homes. No matter where I look while I was praying, I saw Our Lady or Our Lord. And I said, well, I guess Maggie and I did a pretty good job then. Because we try to put it nice. in every corner. And I just bought from Father Damien. He got a couple of Our Lady Prompt Succor statues from Italy. And I just took one off his hands. And we're looking for place to permanently put her. But I love the discussion about the artwork and about the simple and the good, the true and the beautiful. And it's a conversation, brother, that everyone can and should have. Your home, this is where, you know, you spend your joy time with your family. Maybe sometimes your acrimony time with family. And maybe during the acrimony, you need to look up and go like, oh, Lord, Our Lady of Sorrows, help me.
yeah.
But there's just something.